Well, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, or whatever time of day where you happen to be where you are. This is John St. Germain, the voice of the Crystal Silence League, and welcome to Crystal Silence League Hour. And my gosh, I'm glad you're here tonight. I'm glad I'm here tonight. Any day I wake up and I'm still alive, it's a good day. So, how are you tonight? I hope you're doing all right. And welcome to Chapter 3 of our ongoing discussion of the four branches of Mr. Conlon's four branches of crystal gazing. And tonight we're going to look at healing. This is going to be a multi-part discussion because this is a huge topic and one which is I've been delving into for quite a while now. Tonight, we're going to start the discussion with techniques of healing, and we're going to look at incorporating crystal balls and crystals into the topic of healing. So do stay with us and come back and join us in just a few minutes. Grab your crystal balls, grab a cold and frosty beverage or a warm beverage, and come back in just a few minutes. Certainly back. Hope you are. John St. Germain broadcasting live from Castle St. Germain in Knoxville, Tennessee. And this is the Crystal Silence League Hour, brought to you, of course, by LMC Radio Network, the good folks at Lucky Mojo Curio Company. Tonight we are looking at the four branches of crystal gazing, Claude Alexander Conlon's marvelous contributions to the art of living. The Crystal Silence League, for those of you who don't know, was founded around 1917 by Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon for the purpose of distributing positive affirmation and prayer to all those in need. And you can visit us at any time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, at www.crystalsilenceleague.org, where you can post a prayer online. The Crystal Silence League, of course, passed into the silence with Mr. Conlon when he passed away in 1958, I believe, and was revived by spiritual adepts of the Missionary Independent Spiritual Church a few years ago and brought into the internet presence for your purpose. Prayer is always free. You can always join the Crystal Silence League and receive one of Mr. Conlon's publications on how to practice crystal ball gazing. And also with the purchase of a crystal of a $5 value or more, you can get one of these volumes free. Tonight we will be reading excerpts from one of his other publications. Mr. Conlon wrote a five-volume series called The Inner Secrets of Psychology, one of the volumes of which I have before me, and we'll be reading some excerpts on that. The volume, of course, is The Inner Secrets of Health, because that's what we'll be discussing tonight. It is the custom, my custom anyway, since this is my show, to print many of these prayers that people post, and I only read these aloud, identify them by prayer number and occasionally some initials. We don't, many programs, we don't violate the anonymity of the members. So please join me in prayer for some of the people who have posted prayers on the Crystal Silence. Like, we get literally hundreds of these a day, sometimes as many as 1,000 a day when times are very stressful. So here we go. The first prayer is prayer number 39388 OC. Prays for financial help. apparently she's put herself in a bit of a bind of finances and needs to accrue a number of dollars to get out of the financial stress which she's under to help her car. May she find the financial prosperity that she needs to get out from under this debt. Prayer ID number 39387S needs prayer to recover what his enemy has stolen from him. May he please get that returned to him. The most dearest thing to him has been taken from him by his enemy. Prayer ID number 39383DW needs to spend time with his daughter and needs his reconciliation with his daughter's mother. May they be reconciled so he can spend time with his daughter. Prayer ID number 39385MR needs a job interview, has a job interview tomorrow apparently, and needs it's a big opportunity for her, and may she do well in that interview. Prayer ID number 39384SS needs God's will to happen to her because something big, she feels something big is about to come into her life. May that be so. Prayer ID number 39382TC, her husband needs prayer to accept apparently some family problem, and she needs her husband's prayer to stand up for himself and for her. Prayer ID number 39381AG needs the perfect job to come into her life, one that utilizes her special talents with an employer that appreciates her. Prayer ID number 39380HRH needs to go on an exchange to Tokyo next year, and please need praise for her application to be successful. Prayer ID number 39379AMM makes a wish that there be peace with all of us today and every day, and that we trust the Great Spirit to be exactly who we are and where we're meant to be. Prayer ID number 39378DP needs to have her and her husband's finances to be embettered. Prayer ID number 39377CC needs help for her beautiful horse. Prayer ID number 39376MP needs a miracle in her relationship with T. Prayer ID number 39375TS needs blessings for D and J in their relationship. Prayer ID number 39374JK needs to be healthy, strong, and vibrant, especially with an affliction with J's spine. Prayer ID number 39373ER needs to rent a private space within a certain neighborhood so that he can have overnights with his 3-year-old son, G. Prayer ID number 39372HB has a missing cat. The missing cat's name is Tater and needs for her missing cat to return home. Prayer ID number 39371EG needs healing in her throat and ribs and also needs divine protection. And prayer ID number 39370KCL needs to be kept healthy and safe, and that be protected from heart attacks, strokes, aneurysms, heart failure, and even protected from death. And finally, prayer ID number 39369LQM needs help for friend D with his medical issues, and that he is able to engage in sexual activities again, and prays that he feels passion and desire rises in him so they can have a healthy sex life again in spite of his medical issues. May all these people find peace, comfort, satisfaction, and answers to their prayers. And let's all take a moment of silence for all those in need of peace and comfort and help. Thank you. Well, my goodness, in the world today, there's certainly need for peace and comfort and help and some sort of resolution to many things. I saw where the Eastern Cougar was extinct, and they can join the list of many other extinct animals that have joined those that have passed into the silence. I do hope they find some more of those. They're a beautiful, beautiful animal. And I mourn every time an animal passes into extinction because that upsets the chain of nature's balance. Our crystal of the week is fluorite, and that's another one of those crystals. I like these crystals that come in many, many different colors. Fluorite comes in every color. I don't think there's a color that fluorite does not come in. And I recently got a rock tumbler. I've been talking about this. I've been tumbling rocks 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and I tumbled a batch of fluorites, and only too late did I learn that fluorite is a salt, and it's also very soft, and you don't tumble it in with water like you do other crystals. Apparently, you're supposed to tumble it either dry or with corn syrup, and my batch of beautiful fluorites came out much diminished, and they came out nice, but a pound of fluorites came out about a quarter pound of fluorites at the end. But they're very pretty. They're very different, all different colors, and I did learn from this batch. But colors of fluorites are clear, green, violet, purple, brown, blue, yellow, and everything in between. So fluorites can be used. They're white. I've seen them all kinds of shades of blue, reddish, pink. So they do everything. If you wanted to treat chakras, just get fluorites. You can do everything with fluorites. Green will open the heart. You can open the throat, the brow, the crown chakra. So they're good for clarity. They're good for insomnia. They're good for detoxification. You can benefit. They benefit the teeth and bones, you know. Good for arthritis, rheumatism, spinal injuries. They're very good with and associated with other stones. In the book, I'm talking about complementary crystals, using crystals together. So they're very good with use with other stones. You can use them either raw or tumbled. And since you use them with other stones, sometimes you can use them raw, sometimes tumbled. So the clear ones and the purple ones are very good for clearing away new things, very good for cleansing the aura, good for your third eye, good for eyesight. The transparent ones are sometimes called white fluorites. They're good for the seventh crown chakra, so that's good for spiritual work. The green ones are good for heart work, you know. It awakes the heart chakra, so it's good for intuition and love work. The blue one is good for your throat chakra, so it's good for atonement. Good for, you can place it between the eyebrows for the brow chakra. You can do it on the throat chakra as well. Clear communication. Yellow is good for creativity. Lavender is good for serenity and peace. Purple helps you get out of ruts. So you can use red and pink for the heart chakra also. It's good for opening the heart. So you can use the brown ones for working on your root chakra, getting you centered and stable. There's really no end to the usefulness for fluorite. Plus, they're pretty. You know, they're just very pretty. You can now there are rainbow fluorites that are of different colors, and the rainbow fluorites are just generally good for spiritual work altogether. I've heard rainbow fluorites are used to break you loose from if you're too materialistically grounded in the world. If you need to break loose and spread your wings, the rainbow fluorites are very good for that, for spreading your spiritual wings. Helps you get out of ruts of change. So you can just generally blast open your entire spiritual life, your chakra. And, yes, the brown is good for court cases. That's very good. So fluorite is a wonderful, wonderful stone, very, very useful. Fluorites come from China, too, and you can get them in England and all over the place. I bought a 5-pound bag of raw fluorites, and I tumbled a pound of them, so I'm going to experiment with how to do it. I've been tumbling stones with condition oils and seeing how that works. And they come out very powerfully charged when you do that. So it's a wonderful thing. Tonight, our topic is healing. I want to clear up a little bit on attraction work, as we were discussing last week. And I'm very interested in that because I talk to a lot of people who know about law of attraction, and they don't know anything else about it. I talked just the other day. I went to a haircut, got my hair cut, and I talked to the lady, and she asked me what I did, and I told her. And I told her about the Crystal Silence League and how we work with attraction, and I talked about unity and divine science, and very few people know about that. But you mentioned law of attraction, and they know that, but a little more. And when you talk to law of attraction people, I ask them if they know how it works. And they say, well, you put it out to the universe, and the universe responds. And a lot of people think of it as prayer, that God responds. And it's like, no. Because as we talked about last week, the early proponents of divine thought, such as Atkinson, Mr. Conlon, and others, did not couch new thought and attraction, projection, and these things in metaphysical terms. They appealed to rationality, science, and common sense. And so, William Walker Atkinson proposed that thought waves, worked along the same lines as other vibratory phenomena, such as electromagnetism, electricity, light, and that he said that he thought one day machines will be designed that will measure thought just as we measure magnetism and electricity, and that very day has arrived, with the electroencephalograph and other machines. Today we even have machines, if you think of a baseball, that picture appears on the screen. There are thought reading machines now. So we know that as early as 1908, the New Thought authors had a clear understanding of how thought worked that has been verified by science then and verified by science now, that thought is an electromagnetic phenomenon. This is not theory. This is fact. This is why brain mapping works, that thoughts occur, generate heat, generate electromagnetic force, occur in certain areas of the brain, and have physical traits, that different types of thought have physical traits and are recognizable as certain types of thought. Thought has flavor. Thought has a vibratory signature. This was believed and proposed by the early proponents of New Thought. They knew this. Now, they got their information from ancient wisdom passed down from Tibetan and Hindu yogis and yogins of Hindu and Buddhist practitioners. This is verifiable from their knowledge of texts such as Tibetan dream yoga and Buddhist philosophical texts that fell into their information and other sources of information that we have discussed in the past. So they believe that these thought waves endured, that they had the same tendencies that could be propagated, such as light waves. Stars that projected light millennia ago were still around. Furthermore, that these thoughts congregated in like form. In other words, when you thought strong thoughts of prosperity, they sought out and grouped together with similar thoughts of prosperity that were being projected by current sentient beings, and furthermore, that had been projected by similar beings, perhaps even centuries or millennia ago. Therefore, existing in the universe are these huge thought fields of similar thoughts. There are great fields of love thoughts, great fields of prosperity thoughts, great fields of power thoughts, great fields of every imaginable thoughts that attract together, congregate together, and form these huge fields of thought. Now, therefore, if we were to consider that the human mind consists of this type of organized thought, the human mind stored in the brain consists of organized thought. In other words, parts of the brain have this kind of thought, other parts of the brain have this kind of thought. Large areas of organized conscious thought that interact with each other, then what the new thought proponents were proposing was that divine mind consists of the sum total. Now listen to this. Divine mind consists of the sum total of all the conscious thoughts of every sentient being that is and has ever existed. Therefore, this is not a metaphysical concept. It's not the universe giving you a gift. It's not some abstract entity, you know, God or some, you know, Mithra or Zeus or Jehovah giving you a gift. This is the sum total of every thought that's ever been thought, the consciousness, the will of every sentient being that is alive today and has ever been alive, that has ever sent the thought out. These thoughts have clumped together, have attracted each other, and continue to attract thoughts, forming these large vortexes of living sentient will that's organized and continues to interact with living beings. And this is what divine mind is. This is divine mind. This is not some strange metaphysical abstract, but a scientific model that follows the rules of physics as we know it and as it was understood in the days of William Walker Atkinson and other New Thought advocates. Do you get it? Do you understand it? And that when you think a thought, when you send out, when you project thoughts of love, you know, I want my love, when we talk about the universe has a storehouse of stuff waiting for you, this is not some benevolent old geezer sitting out on a cloud saying, you know, hey, John, hey, Jim, hey, Mary, hey, Bill, I'm waiting here for you. This is the sum total of the universe, the sum total of all sentient beings waiting for you, and all you have to do is find the companionable thought. This is the law of correspondence that they keep talking about in New Thought, that for every corresponding thought, there is a corresponding reality. That's the law of correspondence. So for every corresponding thought, everything you send out there, there's a corresponding reality. Somewhere out there is something that makes sense to you. Somewhere out there is something that belongs to you. So if you think, okay, there's got to be somewhere in the universe somebody that can get along with me, somebody that's right for me, you're right. That's the law of correspondence. So for every corresponding thought, there's a corresponding reality. That's the law of correspondence. That's one of the laws that the law of attraction people don't know, the law of correspondence. So it's not that you can just attract anything to you. The law of correspondence says that for every corresponding thought, there's a corresponding reality. So there is a storehouse of stuff out there waiting for you that belongs to you. That's the law of correspondence. Therefore, attract it to you. What's mine? Give it to me. It's not, again, that there's some benevolent old fellow out there waiting for you. But by golly, the universe is full of everything that has ever, the potential of everything that has ever been and ever will be is there. Because everything that has ever lived has been sending thoughts out there since forever. And there it is. And I would like to remind everyone that we do have a number to call in, 657-383-0525. Press 1. Give us your questions. Give us your comments. Give us your experiences. And by golly, I would love to hear from you. We'd love to hear more of you. This is episode number 25, if you can believe that. We've been on the air for longer than that. But this is the 25th episode of Crystal Silence League Hour, and we'd love to hear from you. I really would. It is 657-383-0525. Just press 1. And you know, if you'd like to send questions, too, you can also send questions to our website, crystalsilenceleague.org. Just go to the website and send some questions to us, and I would be glad. I'd love to read some emails over the air of some of your comments, and send some emails to us. We would love to hear that. Also, we do have a newsletter, which I do edit, and go to the crystalsilenceleague.org and subscribe to the newsletter. We have it's chock full of information about attraction and how to bring things into your life and how to heal yourself. And so here we have, back to the topic, we do have this gigantic consciousness, and where you can tap in to get whatever you have. Now, part of that consciousness is a perfect image that you have created in your mind of your life and of you. So when we talk about healing, pardon me just a moment, it's allergy season in East Tennessee, and I'm enjoying the benefits fully of that. Part of this idea of the storehouse of everything waiting for you out there is a perfect image that you've created in your mind, consciously or subconsciously, of a perfect you. Your perfect health, your perfect body, your perfect living condition. Now, whether you know this or not, it's there. So part of our healing strategy is to reach out there with your mind when you go into the silence and latch on to that image, that perfect you, and manifest it. Bring it into reality. Grab it and pull it in. So we do this by bringing our mind into the vicinity, the consciousness of healthiness. Now, we do this with, as it comes as no surprise, that we do this with the help and the assistance of crystals. So, you know, the crystals have healing properties, no news to anybody. We know that crystals have healing properties. But the use of crystal balls for healing, a very unique branch of crystallomancy pioneered by Mr. Conlon. He brought the concepts of New Thought into crystallomancy and pioneered it and taught it and mastered it and wrote quite a bit about it. Now, if you use spheres of crystalline materials such as quartz or hematite or obsidian and other stones known for their natural healing qualities, your projections are naturally enhanced by these properties of the mineral, and projecting your healing thoughts through a healing crystal heterodynes the two energies into a stronger waveform. Now, healing with crystal balls can be performed on yourself, other people, or, you know, from a far distance, you know, using silent influence, or on all humanity at once. It's really quite a wonderful thing, and there's no limit to the scope or power of these healing projections. And, of course, the first step in this, as in all steps, is you purify your intent. You have to clear your mind of any negative thoughts, because what you take into the silence, you're going to bring back out of the silence. And so Mr. Conlon, like all the advocates of New Thought Theory, teaches that thoughts manifest in daily experience. Anything that's in your mind, you're going to bring into your daily experience. So if you fill your mind with obsessive thoughts of disease and illness, those thoughts will surely manifest as actual illness. Florence Scovel Shinn, who a dear lady that I really enjoy reading, says you should never save for a rainy day, because if you do, that rainy day will surely come. And don't save against illness, because if you do, you're putting money away for illness. You're just buying illness. So don't do that. Don't invest for a rainy day. Put your money away for retirement. Me and my good lady, we're putting our money away to go move to Italy. We're gonna live in Tuscany when we retire. And we don't put money away for a rainy day. We don't put money away for illness. You know, we're putting money away for our health. You know, we're investing in a healthy retirement to Tuscany. That's what we don't even think about being sick. So Mr. Conlon advises us, don't read about sickness or symptoms of sickness. Good God, stay off the internet. Don't get on the internet and read about illness and sickness, and don't watch the news and hear about all the disastrous stuff that's going on. Always think, I am strong, healthy, filled with power and vitality. And these are the thoughts and feelings upon which you focus your total attention, and this is what you focus into your crystal. You fill that ball with these healthy thoughts of power and health. Then you go into the silence, and you project those curative thoughts into your crystal ball, and you fill that orb with it. And again, we work with a little 2-inch or 3-inch ball. Don't get a ball the size of a bowling ball or a, or a globe. Just a little ball will do. You fill that ball with these strong, happy thoughts of wellness, and then you send them toward your target, and you radiate those thoughts in every direction, because crystal projection is extremely powerful. Now, if you're healing yourself, remember there's that perfectly healthy, strong you that exists in that divine mind. And all you have to do is connect with this image of yourself in the silence and dwell there with your spiritual twin. See that perfect you. Attract energy from this powerful you into your crystal ball and let the crystal radiate the healing rays, and you bask in those rays as you would under a sun lamp. And if you're healing a particular part of your body, hold the crystal near it, or you roll the crystal over the afflicted body part. And, you know, my technique is to roll that ball in small circles between the palm and the body. You know, it's like kneading clay. Or you roll it in long strokes along the muscle path. Now, I want to tell you something very strange. If you've never done this, if you start collecting little colored crystal balls, those little 2-inch balls, you might be surprised to learn that each colored ball has a different feel against your skin. They don't all feel the same. You can close your eyes and roll them against your skin and tell the difference between these colored balls. Lavender feels really soft, like it's covered with lotion or fur. And amber or yellow will feel wet and cool. It feels like it's been dipped in cold water. And obsidian feels wet and icy. It's almost slimy. It feels like an ice cube. And blue has this kind of cool, tingly feeling. And I'm not kidding you. I'm not lying to you. Now, when they get warm, it's harder to tell them apart if you warm them in your hands. But when you first pick these balls up and roll them, don't rub them, but roll them across your skin with your palm, they feel different because of the energy transfer between your palm and the skin. And if you do this for someone else, you roll it over their chakras, which we'll talk about later, they feel different. And isn't this something? Because you would think out there glass and pigment, and usually the pigments are mineral. It's a mineral that's used to dye glass. So the only thing that causes this difference in sensation is the energy transfer between you and the other person, or you and the skin. And it's a very strange thing. The same techniques can be used with crystals such as quartz, tourmaline, citrine, and many others. Certain crystals are particularly effective for specific conditions, and we'll talk about more of that when we talk about chakras, and we will talk about chakras. Now, if you're a crystal worker, you know, already an experienced crystal worker, you work with healing crystals, you work with chakras, you start incorporating crystal balls into your techniques, you will find remarkable results. You charge those crystals by attracting healing power into them before you put them to work, and your work's going to become a whole lot stronger. You use these techniques of Mr. Conlon to attract the power into the crystals before you use them, and see how much stronger it becomes. I do want to talk about practice. It takes a lot of practice to do these techniques, and if you're determined to learn them, I suggest you set aside time every day to practice, and you should have a curriculum. You should set up a curriculum, and it should look something like this: 1, meditation; 2, going into the silence; 3, projection; 4, attraction; 5, healing. Take them in order, and you don't have to do them all every day, but take them in order. Take them in order. And I believe that you will find that over time your skills develop. Each skill enhances the other. And it's like when you lift weights. Some days are upper body days, some are lower body days. And as your lower body gets stronger, your upper body gets stronger. And then you have core. You work your core, and that works your upper body and your lower body. If any of these is your core skill, it's going to be meditation and going into the silence. And so these are these techniques using attraction and projection. So that's part of the things about healing. Now, before we start talking about the crux of using crystals for healing, I want to talk about health in general. Health in general is in three levels. There's, you could say four, but really there's physical, and there's mental, and there's spiritual health. and you cannot separate these. You really can't. You do have to work on all three of these levels. You must work on all three levels. You must be physically healthy, mentally healthy, and spiritually healthy. Spiritual health comes from meditation, from spiritual exercises, from introspection, from having a good spiritual agenda. Mental health, that's psychology. You got to be mentally healthy, and that's the province of psychology. Psychological and spiritual health, you would think, go hand in hand, but they really don't often. You can be psychologically healthy and spiritually bereft. Sometimes you can be spiritually healthy and still have psychological issues, but physical health, now come on, physical health, physical and mental health are very close. We know that the mind has an intimate relation with the body, and I'm going to tell you that before me right now, I have a book, Inner Secrets of Psychology, by Alexander Conlon, C. Alexander Conlon. It's volume 5 of The Psychology of Health. I want to tell you this book was written in 1924, and the very first statement in it, that there is an intimate relation between mind and body, between mental states and physical conditions, is a fact so well known to the average thinking person of these times that no argument is needed to support it. So that's the very first thing he says. Now, he goes on to say, on the one hand, we find a large body of persons who go so far as to assert that the physical ailments are all purely imaginary and that disease is all in the mind, and who accordingly throw aside all the dictates of common sense and human experience relating to the preservation and restoration of physical health, and as a consequence become fanatics on the subject. On the other hand, we find an equally large body of persons who, by reason of disgust at this extreme, fanatical positions of the class just described, refuse to learn or practice the scientific methods of mental healing and mental preservation of the health, and who satisfy themselves, or at least try to do so, with a statement or opinion that there's nothing to it, or perhaps, using the current slang phrase, foolishly assert that it's all bunk. And he says that both of these large classes of persons overlook the fact that there is a middle ground of reason and experience, a golden mean between the two extremes, which is based on common sense and human experience, and which is occupied today by millions of persons of keen reasoning and efficient observations. These persons have learned that mental states play a most important part in the preservation and restoration of health, and that there are certain simple and practical methods whereby the principles of mental therapeutics may be applied effectively. So, what the bottom line of this is, Mr. Collins says, the processes of the physical body are vital activities governed and directed by mind. Now, he goes on to say that every part of the body, the influence of mind upon the body, is in every part, every organ, and every cell of the body, because there can be no life without mind and no mind without life, and that most of the body is governed unconsciously, but that doesn't mean that that unconscious process is beyond our control. He goes on to say, it's now generally conceded that the best authorities that the subconscious mind has charge and control of the activities and functions of the physical body. Many persons seem to think that the physical organs run themselves like the wheels of a watch, but there is ever in evidence the presence of mind in all the activities of the body, even in the movements and activities of the cells. Therefore, Mr. Conlon believes, and I see no reason to argue with him really, that a healthy mind is a healthy body, and vice versa. Now, here's a very bold statement. In considering the subconscious mind, one must not think of it as resident in the brain alone, but rather as being distributed over the entire physical body. There is mind in every cell, every organ, every muscle, every nerve, in every part of the body. The subconscious mind not only is immanent in every part of the body, but it also dominates every part of the body. This is the holographic mind theory, which many scientists today propose that consciousness is not totally exclusive to the brain. There have been many cases, and I'll tell you the hardcore skeptics poo-poo it, where there have been organ transplants, and people will have memories of the person who donated the organ. Now, you can look these up. There's some very eerie stories. I mean, people have had eye transplants, and they'll see things. They'll have visual memory. People have had heart transplants, and they'll have memories of loved ones and liver. You know, people will have memories. They'll have memories that arise from the person who donated the organ, and therefore there's a theory that memory and consciousness may be holographic. It may be stored in the mitochondria. Therefore, and see, we're looking at books that were written in the 20s. So this sort of idea goes way. Actually, if you go back to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, the Thodol Bardo, there's thoughts like that too. The consciousness stays in the body long after death. So what we're looking for, anyway, the bottom line is that illnesses of the mind, dysfunctions of the mind, can manifest as physical, and we know this. We know this, and. So we're looking at the idea that we must take care of the body for the mind to be healthy, and we must take care of the mind for the body to be healthy. So what about healthy eating? Well, my God, we have such terrible, terrible eating habits. But one of the suggestions that Mr. Conlon talks about is don't bolt your food. Eat slowly. Chew your food, and don't wash it down. He talks about insalivated food gives you more nutrition, and he talks about how there are people who are as large of an ox who eat no more food than a child. And this is taught, by the way, in yoga. This is taught by people that will, you know, if you have a guru, they'll tell you chew your food. Chew your food until it practically swallows itself. Chew your food. It's not sufficiently digested. The penalty imposed for improper mastication or no mastication at all is that your food reaches the stomach and small intestine with its starchy elements improperly transformed, and with the other elements insufficiently broken up, the result being much slower and much harder digestion. Improperly chewed food and accordingly insufficiently insalivated food, the result of bolting the food, fills the stomach with an indigestible mass of spoiled food substance, which in many cases is subject to the process of putrefaction and fermentation. Too often, in fact, it becomes a foul cesspool filled with a malodorous, rotting, putrefying, fermenting mess. The long-continued result of such an unnatural condition is that the stomach lining becomes soft, thin, slimy, and weak, and the stomach glands become impaired and broken down. Can you not see how easily such a condition must produce the ills of chronic indigestion, weak stomach, or dyspepsia? My God, this is so true. I think 9 out of 10 of my friends eat Tums and stuff like you wouldn't believe it. Chew your food. Chew your food. And so he says, the moral is plain. Give your digestive cells the kind of material that nature intends them to have, material properly and naturally masticated and insalivated. This is particularly true when the food is of a starchy nature, such as bread, rice, macaroni, or foods prepared from the grains of any kind. Meat foods require less insalivation than do starchy foods. But even meat foods should be broken up into small particles so that digestive juices may reach them easily and thoroughly. I disagree with him there. I think meat needs to be chewed even more. But if you want to eat meat, chew it. You should, I think, basically chew your food until it's just mush. But starch is a good point, too. You got to really digest your... Chew your food, folks. Chew your food. And I'm going to have to... take a break here probably and take a drink, but chew your food. The Orientals hold that this process of extreme mastication, they extracted something besides nourishing material from their food. They hold that in this way they extracted the supply of a subtle and natural force called prana, or vital energy, from their food, and thus absorbed it into their system. I questioned them closely about their method of extracting this prana, but all that I could get from them, though they insisted that this is all there is to tell about it, was this. Chew your food thoroughly until it dissolves itself and is swallowed involuntarily by you, at the same time hold in your mind the thought that you're extracting from the food the prana, which nature has placed in it, and which has caused it to grow and develop in its natural state. The right thought, added to the mastication, tends to release and unloose the particles of prana and to cause you to absorb them into your system. This is the whole secret. We're holding nothing back from you. And Mr. Conlon says, I pass on to you this secret, just as it was imparted to me. Western science has nothing to say about it, though many Western persons have applied the method with results most satisfactory to them. I personally have derived benefit from it many times and for many years, yet I cannot prove it to you. It's a matter of your own experience must reveal to you. If it appeals to you, try it, and find out for yourself just what there is to it. But whether you try it or merely pass it by, I once more ask you to observe what I have said to you concerning the importance of thorough mastication in the light of your own Western physiology without reference to the additional Oriental teaching. Now, he goes on to say another point of healthy eating, which is emphasized by the wise men of the Orient and those of the Occident as well, the habit of eating in response to hunger instead of appetite. Oh man, do I want to tell you about this. People eat too much. And people eat in response to stress and loneliness and boredom. And let's see what Mr. Collins says. This may seem like a strange idea. It certainly did to me when I first heard it. But I can assure it's a true one, and one with which it's worthwhile to become acquainted. Hunger is the feeling denoting the normal demand of food. Appetite is the feeling denoting an abnormal cultivated craving for the taste of certain food, usually some highly flavored or fancy food. Here's an example. You're eating a hearty meal and feel even more than satisfied. Then some sweet and tempting dessert is placed before you. You're certainly not hungry for it, yet you crave it. That craving is appetite. The appetite for food articles is akin to that for tobacco, liquor, fancy drinks, candy, etc. On the contrary, real hunger for food is akin to nothing else. It's classic by itself. It's the call of the cells for nourishment and sustenance. And its demand is not for fancy, tempting dishes, but for a real food that will supply nourishment. Isn't that true? Appetite, as distinguished from hunger, is a desire for the gratification of sensation. The drunkard has an appetite for liquor, but he cannot have a hunger for it. A normally fed person cannot have a hunger for candy or sweets. The desire for these things is an appetite. You cannot hunger for tea, coffee, spiced foods, or the various taste-tempting devices of the skilled cook. If you desire these things, it's with appetite, not with hunger. Hunger is nature's call for the material to be used in building new cells, and nature never calls for anything which may not be legitimately used for this purpose. Appetite is often largely a matter of habit. Its desire should never be mistaken for hunger. Whatever you eat after you hunger abates is taken to gratify taste and appetite, not hunger, and is not called for by nature at all. It is therefore excess, mere debauchery, and it cannot fail to work mischief. These are the words of Mr. Conlon. The habit of eating for mere sensual gratification is very deeply rooted with most of us. The usual dessert of sweet and tempting foods is prepared solely with a view to inducing people to eat after hunger has been satisfied, and all the effects are evil. Wow. Okay, then. The road to hell is paved with pettifogs and chocolate chip cookies. If you would know what real hunger is, go out camping in the wilds where fancy food is impossible to obtain. See then and there how palatable are the plain articles of food at your disposal. You enjoy your meals as you have not since you were a child. The food tastes like that which mother used to cook. Why? Simply because it's eaten in response to real hunger, not mere appetite. There you go. All right, then. No glutton ever enjoyed a meal like the man who eats for hunger only, for who gets the most out of every mouthful and who stops on the instant that he feels the edge is taken from his hunger. The first intimation that hunger is abating is the signal from the subconscious mind to quit eating. Well, there you go. Mr. Collin is not big on indulging. There's a spiritual decadence to indulging that deprives a person of mental and physical and spiritual health. He doesn't tell you to completely give it up altogether, but too much excess destroys a person. And he says many times, if you want to throw away the richness and the bounty that can be yours for a few indulgences, it's your choice. It's your choice. I will tell you that the other day, I was at my orthopedic place. You know, I had rotator cuff surgery, which, by the way, I'm recovering from at remarkable speed for a man at 55. And there was a gentleman sitting next to me, and he was wheezing and gasping, and I was thinking, man, this poor old guy. And he was filling out his form, and he got up to turn it in, and I happened to look at he was bent over and arthritic, and I thought, man, this poor old guy, he's got one foot in the grave. He was born 2 years before me, and oh dear God, it was an example of how the difference. Y'all don't know me, but you know, if you saw me, I'm 55. My doctor told me physiologically I'm a man of about 35, and it really is simply, I mean, there's a genetic factor as well. But you know, I don't drink and I don't smoke and I only chase one woman at a time. So it's simply a matter of if you chase these indulgences to the point where you destroy yourself, you're going to pay for it. let's take a break and for station identification, and pray for forgiveness for our indulgences, I suppose. After you read some of these things, you sort of feel like you've been beaten with a stick, don't you? We'll return in just a few minutes.
You are listening to the LMC Radio Network, whose art and information may be found on its webcast shows. The LMC Radio Network is a community radio alliance of metaphysical, spiritual, inspirational, and political justice broadcasters spanning a wide range of topics. Tune in Sundays for the Lucky Mojo Hoodoo Rootwork Hour, hosted by Catherine Ironwood and Conjurman Ali. It features panel discussions on traditional African-American hoodoo spellcasting with members of the Association of Independent Readers and Rootworkers, plus free readings and magical rootwork advice for live call-in clients. The longest-running conjure show in the universe, it may be heard from 3 o'clock to 4:30 Pacific Time, Sunday afternoons. On Mondays, get ready for Candelo's Corner, starring Candelo Cambisa. This is the meeting place for all esoteric traditions. Candelo brings his insight as a Polero and eclectic spiritualist to his interviews with peers in Afro-Caribbean lineages, as well as representatives of numerous other spiritualities and religions. You can hear Candelo's Corner Monday evenings from 5 to 7 Pacific Time. Tuesdays bring two wonderful shows to suit your taste. After the spiritual boost provided by the Reverend John St. Germain during the Crystal Silence League Hour, stay tuned for In the Streets with Beverly Smith. Beverly provides up-to-the-minute reports on civil and social rights issues. Her one-hour show airs on Tuesday evenings at 6 p.m. Pacific Time. On Wednesday nights, come out and join Liquid Libations. Andrea Weston hosts this informal sharing and showcasing of poetry, short stories, and spoken word performances, contributed by novices and professional wordsmiths. Call in and read your work. Liquid Libations may be heard on Wednesdays from 5 to 7 p.m. Pacific Time. On Thursdays, it's the Now You Know Show with Professor Porterfield. In a variety show laced with country wit and biblical wisdom, the professor shares his knowledge of roots, delivers the lucky numbers, and explores the secrets of scriptural sorcery. From 6 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time, there's no end to the surprises. And on Saturdays, Kai Armand broadcasts On Sacred Ground, a tapestry of our times comprising history, ethnography, and shamanism, featuring the voices of the land and the deceased, aided by scholars, spirit workers, and environmentalists. Kai's show airs from noon to 1:30 p.m. Pacific Time. All shows on the LMC Radio Network are sponsored by the Lucky Mojo Curio Company, located in Forestville, California, and online at luckymojo.com. Add 3 hours for Eastern, tax and license may apply, train departure times and Burma shape signs subject to change without notice. LMC.
And we're back. So going back to our teacher and our mentor and our guide, Mr. Claude Alexander Conlon, he says, "It's plain that if we were to depend upon the food theorists, we shall never know what is natural food of man." And those words are as true today as ever. I've seen dietary fads come and go. Turning away from the controversies, let us ask the question of nature herself, and we'll find that she has not left us without an answer. The great intelligence in nature has been in reality practically settled. The question is what to eat. It's given to each individual the instinct to decide just what he needs in the particular environment in which he finds himself, provided that he's living the natural life and is depending upon hunger rather than upon appetite. So I say the question, what shall I eat, has been answered for you. Eat wheat, corn, rye, oats, barley, buckwheat. Eat vegetables, eat meats, eat fruits. Eat the things that are eaten by the masses of the people around the world. For in this matter, the voice of the people is the choice of nature. They've been led generally to the selection of certain foods, and they've been led generally to prepare these foods in generally similar ways, and you may depend on it that in general they have the right foods and are preparing them in the right way. In these matters, the race have been under the guidance of nature. The list of foods in common use is a long one, and you must select therefrom according to your individual taste. If you do, you'll find that you have an infallible guide. If you eat in the right manner, your taste will become so natural that you will never want anything you cannot eat with impunity, and you can drop from your mind the anxious question of what to eat and simply eat what you want. The food found on the table of any ordinary, middle-class, or working family will nourish your body perfectly if you eat it in the right way. When you eat, do so with an eye single to the purpose of getting all the natural enjoyment possible from that meal. Dismiss everything else from your mind, and do not let anything take your attention from the food and its taste until your meal is finished. And boy, I agree with that. Don't watch TV, don't read. Concentrate on your meal. I have some suggestions in that too. Be cheerfully confident, for if you will follow the right plan of eating, you may be sure that the food you eat is exactly the right food and that it will agree with you to perfection. Sit down to the table with confident cheerfulness and take a moderate portion of the food that appeals to your natural hunger taste. Take whatever thing appeals to you in this way. Do not select some food merely because you think it may be good for you. Select that which will taste good to you and will satisfy your normal hunger. If you are to get well, stay well, you must drop the idea of doing things merely because they are good for your health and do things because you want to do them, provided you've acquired and followed the natural instinct in the matter. Select the food you want most, take a moderate mouthful of it, masticate it thoroughly, and gratefully give thanks to God that you have learned the art of the natural choosing of food and how to eat in such a way that digestion shall be perfect. Isn't that good? Bread and butter, beef, steak, potatoes, eggs, and milk with plenty of green vegetables and fruits. Eat a variety of foods. Avoid make dishes and rich dishes. Eat plenty of fruit and green vegetables. Do not eat too much fat. Beware of the ubiquitous frying pan. Do not eat too much meat. Particularly avoid pig meat. Incline toward the simple plain fare rather than toward the elaborate dishes. Go slow on pastry, sweets, and hot cakes. Cut out condiments, spices, and relishes. Eat in response to normal hunger after abnormal appetites have been overcome and masticate your food thoroughly. Don't be afraid of your food. If you eat it properly, it will not harm you, provided that you're not afraid of it. With a natural hunger present, your instinct will select nutritious food for you. Your instinct is a safe guide, provided that it has not been spoiled by indulgences of false appetite. Finally, I would say to you, mix good thoughts with your food. Isn't that great? Next week, my secret recipe for barbecued spare ribs. Good night, good luck, good dinner, and talk to you later.